If you live in New York City, you've probably grown accustomed to the sight of the Palisades, the cliffs that span along the New Jersey side of the Hudson River. According to the World Monument Fund, they are among many endangered culturally significant landmarks that are at risk of being permanently altered or destroyed by forces of nature, economics, or political conflict. The WMF released the latest of its biannual list this week, expressing concern for 67 sites in 41 countries, including the Kinnis Reliefs in Iraq, the Grimsby Ice Factory in the UK, and the entire city of Venice, Italy. Bonnie Burnham is the president of the WMF, and I'm very pleased that she's able to join us now. Welcome back to our show.
Thank you so much.
The World Monument Fund releases a list of these endangered sites once every 2 years. Are there any carryovers from the last list?
Yes, there's one carryover. It's the sites in Japan, in northern Japan, that were impacted by the tsunami and earthquake. The heritage renewal is just getting underway there.
Are any from the old list no longer considered at risk?
We think we've saved a certain number of buildings, including the Orange County Municipal Building in Goshen, New York, which has been spared from demolition, and another 1970s landmark in Preston, England, that has been spared from demolition.
Well, I was wondering about the Palisades, the Hudson River Palisades, shaped millions of years ago by nature. How can they suddenly be in danger?
Well, the term endangered, it covers a broad spectrum of things. And what's at risk here is our enjoyment of that beautiful landscape as a result of new construction that's proposed in Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey, which would allow a factory headquarters to rise about 100 feet above the tree line. Since the 1930s, when the Rockefellers purchased the Palisades in order to preserve that pristine nature and make it an amenity for the city of New York and a beautiful view for inhabitants of the upper boroughs, it really would represent an irreversible change.
Well, they became a designated national landmark in 1983. Right. Why haven't zoning laws been able to protect them from these developments?
What's happened is that traditionally the townships of New Jersey have participated in a kind of public trust to keep the zoning laws consistent with the idea that the ridgeline and the tree line are protected. But Englewood Cliffs first issued a variance and then changed their zoning laws from 35 feet high to 143 in order to accommodate this tower. And the implications of that, of course, are that every piece of land adjacent to the Palisades can now be built higher.
Another endangered site is the Jefferson Expansion Memorial, more commonly known as the St. Louis Arch. Well, I visited it not all that long ago, and it didn't seem to be in any danger or of much cultural significance for that matter. So what constitutes a cultural heritage site?
Well, this is a famous landmark by a famous architect, Saarinen, and it's meant to symbolize something that's very important in the history of our country, the American westward expansion, although it wasn't built in a time associated with the westward expansion. It was built in the 50s.
Well, mostly it's a place where people go up to the top. Well, kind of like an amusement park.
If they can go up a certain way, but actually the concern is over corrosion. And these modern, it's indicative of the vigilance of the National Park Service, actually, that they even discovered the corrosion. But they don't actually know what to do about it, and they don't have the resources. So something that's really a big part of our contemporary culture, we felt was worthy of being recognized for.
Some of the sites, like the village of Pak Fu Lam in Hong Kong, are virtually unknown. How did they wind up on your group's radar?
The watch list is constituted completely through nominations from local groups and local advocates. The advocate of the Pak Fu Lam village was a student at the university in Hong Kong and was taking a course in historic preservation, and it made him think about his own community and realize that it had a lot of cultural significance that it had perhaps not been recognized and it's not protected in any way. So he's the one who actually led this campaign.
The Chinati Foundation in Marfa, Texas, has publicly expressed its approval of its buildings being added to the list this year, saying that the international attention provided by this designation will help Chinati expand awareness and help galvanize financial support. I'm assuming that's one of the goals of the WMF when you release this list. But should we be surprised that structures created by as celebrated an artist as Donald Judd would wind up being endangered?
Well, the structures were not actually created by Judd. They were already there when he purchased the property. One was a farm building. One was a former, like a Quonset hut, a military building. And he modified them according to his designs in order to accommodate his sculpture. And he sees that whole ensemble as a work of art. So when you begin to approach the need to preserve these buildings, a variety of technical issues arise. And also, I think what the Chinati Foundation's goal was for people to recognize that this was really part of what it was important to preserve out of Judd's legacy.
Now, the reasons that these places are endangered can be quite varied. For instance, some places are at risk because of nearby violence and political conflict. I remember years ago when Angkor Wat, which has now become a major tourist attraction, was in danger because the Khmer Rouge soldiers were using it for target practice.
We had Angkor on our very first watch list, and we've been working there since 1990, so we're very familiar with how that has changed. It's been an amazing transformation. But it's true, the circumstances change. We're very concerned this year, but of course, with Syria.
You put the whole country on the watch list.
Well, it's the heartland of the ancient world, and there are sites dating back to 5,000 years ago. There are sites as recent as the 19th century, and everything is up for grabs there.
My guest is Bonnie Burnham, who's the president of the World Monuments Fund. You note that local authorities often make economic decisions about global heritage sites based on the funds and resources available to them. Is the WMF able to get monetary support for some of them so that they'll survive?
Yes. We have a commitment annually of $1 million from American Express, which goes to, I would say, 7 or 8 grants for the sites that are most publicly enjoyed and the really high-profile ones. But we raise funds constantly for the watch list. Over the 20-year span of the program, we've contributed about $90 million, but that's leveraged about 3 times that much.
We just were talking about the debate over the development of seeds in Hawaii, and which some people consider dangerous and others consider an important economic boon for the area. Many heritage professionals have said that local authorities in Venice, Italy, have prioritized large-scale cruise ship tourism over the cultural importance of the city.
That's why it's included on our watch list, to try to take a closer look at the situation. The cruise ship traffic has expanded fourfold in just less than 10 years. And on any given day during the high tourist season, there can be 20,000 people who've come off these ships in the streets of Venice. That's a third of the size of the city's entire population.
Then there's the problem of climate change endangering a city like Venice. Are there any others, any other places on the list that are also faced with climate change problems?
We've had a lot of climate-impacted sites on our watch list over time, and we're working at one major site on the coast of Africa called Kilwa, where the rising sea is directly impacting it. I think you could say that the sites that were affected by the tsunami are impacted by climate change, but there's not a prominent site on this list that's threatened by that. It certainly is a phenomenon we work with.
These are all big things, and then we have the WMF expressing concern over Berlin's plan to replace the city's tens of thousands of gas lamps with more modern, less attractive lighting fixtures. That seems to me to be a minor aesthetic decision, as sad as so many of the decisions made in Berlin appear to be, to me anyway. They often tear down the building they should save and save the building they should tear down.
Well, maybe that's why it rose to this level. I agree that it's a very local issue, and at the same time, it's a very interesting case history, because there are ways to demonstrate that the traditional gas lamps are, in fact, more energy efficient and will have more longevity. So we just wanted to highlight that. It's all about public awareness.
Well, a lot of the sites that are endangered seem to me to be victims of proposed modernization plans.
Well, when modernization impacts upon a traditional environment, you have to make very careful plans to accommodate the survival of what's important, what really gives texture and richness to life. And sometimes that doesn't happen.
Well, in New York, we've often debated whether we should save a building that has a certain aesthetic beauty as opposed to taking it down and putting up something that might make a lot more money and use the limited space we have here. That's what's happening all over the world, isn't it?
It is happening all over the world. That's certainly related to the issue that we're facing in Venice. There's the historic center of old Rangoon, Burma, is on the watch list because that economy is exploding. There's a lot of new development, and there are no regulations in place.
And you also mentioned Dar es Salaam in Tanzania.
That's right.
To what extent does the WMF help these communities in coming up with solutions to their preservation problems?
Communities like Yangon are looking for an international authoritative voice or the voices of experts to simply weigh in and say, this is important. This could really turn out to be your biggest economic asset, the traditional culture that you have. And so you need to look at it that way, and that could be extremely influential. That's what we hope to achieve.
If listeners are interested in obtaining the complete list, how do they do that?
They can go to our website, wmf.org/watch. We've actually got a couple of petitions up, one to support to provide solidarity for the Syrian monuments, and another to sign on to a protest about the situation in the Palisades.
We have a link to the World Monument Fund's 2014 watch list of endangered cultural heritage sites on our show page at WNYC.org. Do you think that Assad is paying attention to your concerns about what's going on in his country?
I'd like to think that Assad's paying attention to all the concerns that people have about what's going on in his country. But it was the Director of Antiquities of Syria that nominated several sites to our list.
But there's been a lot of looting there as a result of
the
civil war.
Yes, there has been. There was a so-called red list of antiquities released last week out of concern of things on the market. But the Director of Antiquities knows about the petition, and he's been checking. He's told us this morning he's been checking our website to see how many people have signed it. He's thrilled.
Well, we saw something similar happen in Iraq. Has that worked out okay? Has that been stopped?
The looting is actually, there seems to be an uptick in looting in Iraq in recent times, but we've worked quite successfully there ever since the end of the war at Babylon.
Bonnie Burnham is president of the World Monuments Fund. They have just released their latest watch list of sites that are endangered, although they have culturally significant, they're culturally significant landmarks. Thank you so much for being on our show.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
On tomorrow's Food Fridays, New York Times Dining Section columnist Melissa Clark will share her ideas on what to do with pumpkins other than carving them. And then we'll go behind the scenes of the Food Network and find out how the channel went from struggling startup to cultural staple over the last 20 years. Documentarian Deborah Coons Garcia and scientists Ignacio Chapella and Michael Hansen talk about the complexity and mystery of soil. And with another salmonella outbreak in the news, Please Explain is about the things that cause food poisoning. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Judy Corcoran, Jessica Miller, and Fanny Cohen. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. Victoria Washington was at the audio controls. We had help today from Gabrielle Alfiero. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.